We're delighted to be joined here at Phoenix FM today by an absolute legend, the star of Blue Peter, Doctor Who and Crufts, Peter Purvis. Hello, Peter.
Hi, Paul. How are you?
Very well, thanks. Thanks for spending a little bit of time with us today here in Brentwood. Great to have you in the studio.
Yep, nice to be here.
Now, you're well known as a TV personality who's been appearing on our sets for many years, but your love of dogs has been with you even longer. When you had your first dog, did you think, yeah, this is going to be my life now?
No. No, I mean, my first real dog, my parents had a dog when I was 11, and I was away at boarding school anyway, so it was really their dog. That was a Cocker Spaniel. Actually, I don't think it was. I think it was probably a Field Spaniel, but the definitions and defining features weren't as rigid as they are these days. My first real involvement with dogs was on Blue Peter. It was with television, because as an actor, you can't keep a dog. I mean, you're travelling around, you're doing all sorts of stuff. You never know where you're going to be. You've got to give dog time. And if you want to live with a dog, it's not possible as an actor. It was possible, though, with a TV presenting job, because the dog was on the programme. It was part of the programme. So I looked after Petra for 10 years of her life until she died. And because of that, I think the people who were presenting Crufts at the time were, of course, it was the BBC. They came to me to see if I was interested in doing various presentation bits at Crufts. And I started off demonstrating the first agility that they had, and then moved on to doing the obedience and agility and fly ball, doing all the commentaries and presenting those parts of the show. And in 1990, I was made the principal presenter, well, actually joint presenter with Angela Rippon. And I did that with her for 2 years, and Jessica Holm came on the scene. And in fact, in total, I did 41 years at Crufts. And I had no idea when I said that, yes, I would take on Petra, that would have any influence on my life and career at all. But, of course, it had a major influence.
It's quite a journey, isn't it, to go from actor to presenter to suddenly the voice of dogs, if you like, in this country. It's incredible. And Petra, of course, would have been one of the most famous dogs in the country during the 1970s.
Certainly was, yes.
Yeah, I mean, what was it like living with her? Did you used to take her for walks?
And she was an alpha dog. Although she was a bitch, she was an alpha animal. We normally think of the alpha animal being a male, but no, she was a top dog. I had a friend, I was living in Wandsworth at the time, and we used to take the dogs on Wandsworth Common, and this friend had a Doberman, which is a fairly dominant dog as a rule. It was a male, lovely dog. If she was on the common and I arrived with Petra, her dog would go home. That shows, I think, what kind of dog she was. She was sharp. I remember we had all her puppies in the studio on one occasion, and it developed into total chaos because it only took one trigger. And all of the animals in her litter, I think, had the same edge that she had. And so trying to keep them apart was a bit chaotic. So, she was a strange animal. She was very nervous. She latched on to me, and it made her life in the studio much happier because she came to work with me. She came home with me. If I was going filming, I often took her with me. She was very much my dog. And although she was owned by the BBC, I looked after her, I fed her, I took her to the vets, I brought her to the studio, and I played with her, and yeah. Lovely dog.
And she probably didn't feel like she was working at all. She just thought, oh, great, I'm going out with Peter today again.
Yes, I think that, I mean, that was the intention. I don't think she ever felt anything was great. She was a grumpy old thing, really. But I was very fond of her, and I've got some very nice pictures of her.
And your time at Crufts, I mean, you didn't actually show dogs at Crufts as such. And
I've never shown dogs.
No, your involvement came because of really through Blue Peter and the high profile that you gave dogs on TV.
Yeah, well, I mean, I learn things and I observe things. My first 10 years at Crofts was doing the obedience championships with the lovely Muriel Pierce. I mean, she was a real expert. She'd won it herself 6 times with the same bitch, which was an amazing achievement. And I was there to do the actual presentation and to keep it. She wasn't good at television. That wasn't her skill. That was my skill. And so we paired up very well. And so I would ask often the naive question that I'm sure most of the audience would ask. And we then got the information that we needed to get out across. So that was fun. And, of course, that was at the when things like agility and flyball were beginning to come into the popularity stakes and lots of people were beginning to get involved and joining teams and setting up teams and so on. That all developed during my time. And so I often, to a certain extent, we instigated what happened. Flyball was a totally new thing that came in. I had no involvement in developing it, but I was there to commentate on it to make sure people understood what it was about. We lost the war on that because flyball used to be the dog would go to the box, press the lever, and the ball would fly, hence its name. They wanted to do it faster and faster and faster. So now the box releases the ball when the dog gets its head on it. So it's the fly ball thing, which I thought was a wonderful bit of extra enjoyment because you never knew whether the dog was going to catch it. That was the first thing. And then they've got to come back and get it back. Now the dogs just race up. They've got the ball. They rarely drop it. It's a different thing. It's very exciting. I preferred the old one. It was slightly more leisurely and a bit more sensible, I thought.
Now, you're in Brentwood today with our next-door neighbour, the Essex Dog Training Centre, with Roy Dyer, who's sitting in the studio with us. And you've had a long association with Roy, haven't you?
I've known Roy since it must be the late 80s when we first our paths first properly crossed, and that would be at Crofts. And it was quite interesting because that first year they were doing a demonstration in the ring, in the main ring, and they did something which was a bit naughty because the Kennel Club at that time refused to recognise white German Shepherds. And Roy had a white German Shepherd in his team, and they were in the main arena. The Kennel Club wasn't happy. Everyone else was because the dog was magnificent.
Now, you're here today to actually present some awards to some very special children and some outstanding dog handlers as well. So tell us a little bit about that. What kind of things are they achieving?
Well, I believe they're all cynophobia awards. Cynophobia is a long, complicated word, which in simple terms just means a morbid fear of dogs. Like any other phobia, it is a real thing. And it affects some people very, very badly. These awards will be for people who've worked with the cynophobia team, which Roy set up. He developed the actual methods that were used to get children to not be frightened of dogs. And this isn't only children. There are adults who suffer the same way and would benefit in exactly the same way. So some of the awards will be for people who've worked on that with Roy over a period. And I'll know many of them. The children, that's a different matter altogether. These are children who probably would have cried, refused to go into a park because there were dogs, wet themselves sometimes when they see a dog. I mean, a genuine terror of dogs. And these are children who have overcome it. And they overcome it in the simplest of terms. These are children who will go up now. They're not stupid. They won't now rush up and put their arms around any dog. But the dogs that they now know, they have no fear of at all. And they go into the classes then, you'll see them cuddling a Leonberger or, you know, a really big dog. Sometimes the dog's bigger than the child. And they learn how to handle them. And they walk them round and they stroke them and they touch them. And they begin to realise that dogs are not horrific creatures. At that point, their main fear is gone. It doesn't mean that they're not tentative sometimes with dogs that they don't know, and so people should be. I mean, I wouldn't. I've got one little dog at home. It's only a Pekingese. I've got 5 dogs at home. One of them is a little black Pekingese, And he's fearsome. He's a wonderful dog. He's a Russian dog, actually, and we think he's a Russian spy. He will bite, and he's a lovely animal. He bites out of excitement. He's really excited. He's not madly. It isn't real aggression, but he will nip. And if people are not sympathetic to him, he knows straight away. He senses either a fear or a disinterest, and he reacts to that. We can't stop him doing it. When I go home today, he'll be very excited to see me. And when I put my hand down to him, I'm very careful because he would bite me. But he wouldn't attack me. It's because I'm making a movement to him, and there's a difference. And you've got to know, Roy will talk quite clearly about this, and I hope I'm not talking madness, but everyone thinks a dog's wagging its tail, therefore it's happy. Mm-mm. You've got to determine what kind of wag's going on. You can tell an excited wag. You can tell a frightened wag. You can tell an aggressive wag. And you can tell a happy wag, but they are different. And the dog is telling you something. And you've got to live with a dog. You have to understand their heads, what goes on in their head. They don't think much. They can't analyze things. They can't, you know, they say, oh, it's a very clever dog. Can it write a letter? Can't. Of course it can't. They are intelligent in their own way, and you have to understand what it is they do. And Roy is absolutely brilliant at both training dogs and about teaching people how to react to dogs, what they should do, how they should behave. I mean, I've judged at companion dog shows. Great fun. I've been bitten once at that, and it was very interesting. It was an event in Norwich, and the woman who brought that dog, people told me afterwards, I didn't know, oh, she's always doing that. She brings this same dog, it's a little terrier, and it bites nastily. I mean, I had to go to the hospital and have a tetanus jab and all the rest of it. It's the only time I've been bitten, and I approach the dogs, and when you're judging, you've got to look at their teeth, you've got to look at their ears, you've got to feel their bodies. The dog must know you're not threatening to them. So I know how to handle dogs, but this one was a real wild one. There was no way. It didn't show anything. It just bit. And that, whoops, its first movement was to attack. Roy would probably tell me I did something wrong if he'd seen it. I may have. May have just been a bit careless. But dogs, they're wonderful creatures. I love them to bits. And they're great companions. I've had big dogs and little dogs. I used to keep Newfoundlands, and I absolutely adored them. Wonderful temperament. And we had them at the same time as we had Pekingese. The Pekingese treated the big dogs as cushions. I mean, they got on really well. Temperamentally, they matched. It was really rather nice to see. At the moment, we've had standard wirehaired Dachshunds, and I've got one miniature and one old standard at the moment, and we've got three Pekingese. The standard Dachshunds, all, it was a litter we bred, and they all had back problems. The structure of a dog is really to be considered. The long-bodied dogs, they do have problems. So I wouldn't recommend them to anyone, but they are the nicest temperament dogs I've ever come across. They're absolutely wonderful.
In a minute, you're off to the award ceremony, as we mentioned, and there's a billion questions I could ask about your career. We're going to go for one about Doctor Who. Our very well-informed listeners will remember you from your appearances as Stephen Taylor in the 1965 and 66. Now, that's a role you're still involved with because you reprise him in many audio recordings over the last 15 years. So Doctor Who, I imagine, has got a very special place in your heart.
Yeah, it has, and it's a recovered fondness. I did the show. I had a good time doing it. I was in a television series. How wonderful. I was only young. I was 25, I think, when I left. And I played this character, Stephen Taylor. I got the part because I played a little cameo role of an American hillbilly in a previous episode of the show. And I didn't know at the time, but Bill Hartnell had sort of pointed me out and said to the producer that they needed a replacement for William Russell and Jacqueline Hill, who were leaving. And he pointed the producer to me and said, watch this boy. And they did when I played this cameo, which was a crazy part. It was a comedy role. I played a character called Morton Dill, who meets the Doctor and the team on the top of the Empire State Building and later meets the Daleks in the same place. I'm the only person to have taken the mickey out of a Dalek and not been exterminated. But that was my audition piece, and I didn't know. And I got the part of Steve, and I was playing him 3 weeks later in the same serial. The first one, Morton Dill, was episode 3, and I played Stephen Taylor in episode 6. And then I stayed and did 46 episodes in total. So, yes, very fond, but it's a recovered memory. I went on, did other things, and to a large extent, I've forgotten about Doctor Who. I forgot what the stories were about. I forgot what they were called. I didn't remember much about it. And I was approached to do these audio recordings, which, first of all, were BBC recordings, which were using the original soundtrack, and my commentary was covering the visuals. So I described what's happening, and then we heard in the gaps of what people couldn't see, I was telling the story. And it reminded me of my work, which I realised was I'd had a good time. And there was a lot of work there. 46 episodes was a lot in a year. Since then, it's grown, and Big Finish, who make the audio recordings now of original Doctor Who stories on audio, I've made, I think, 38 of those. And I mean, it's great fun. It's proper acting, and it's really a good character to get my teeth into again. And I remember it. My voice hasn't changed much. So one way or another, it's been a very big part of my life. It's a bigger part of my life now than it ever was when I was in it.
Peter, it's been great chatting to you today. Thanks very much for your time, and good luck with Roy at the awards ceremony today.
Thanks very much.